going to talk about a specific alcohol-related issue, HIV-related issue, alcohol-related situational violence, which is misspelled there, and I will define a little later on. I'm from the Chapel Hill Center of PIRE, and I'd like to acknowledge the other folks who worked on this model, Joe Berkmeyer and Debbie Fisher. So just to remind you where we are, Joe presented the kind of overall systems model, and then we heard about two state-specific examples, and now we're going to talk about two issue-specific examples or applications of the model. And I'm going to talk about the red, which is the alcohol-related situational violence, and then Joe's going to be talking about methamphetamine. So why alcohol and violence? My interest area is violence, so I was very excited when Joe approached me about thinking about applying this model to violence or alcohol-related violence. And we know that alcohol is involved, and I'm avoiding using causal language, but we know it's associated with or alcohol has been used by either the victim or the perpetrator in about half of all violent crimes. And that it's also involved in a substantial portion, depending on what crime you look at, in other non-violent crimes. And we also know that the use of alcohol can escalate violence in situations where there's a conflict or an assault. But perhaps more importantly, there were several of the SPIF states that identified alcohol-related violence as their ATOD issue, their priority issue, or one of their priorities. And what we found was that there really weren't models that could help guide communities to develop intervention prevention strategies. There were lots of research models, there were lots of theories, there was lots of research that looked at the relationship, but nothing that could really take that next step to guiding intervention. So we actually followed the same methodology that Joe described, so I'm just putting it up here and kind of did a search and replace. But we looked at the research literature. I know I keep going in and out here, sorry. And identified from that literature key intervening variables that linked alcohol and interpersonal violence. And then we summarized that key literature for each of the intervening variables that we identified. And then from that developed, and Joe, are you going to pass out the model? And from that, we developed what I'm calling a conceptual model. It's not really a logic model that kind of shows the relationship among these intervening variables and alcohol-related situational violence. And again, we're hoping that that model can be used by communities to help guide the development of prevention strategies. And I should say that in this field, we actually had to look at very disparate literatures. And as Joe mentioned, we looked at a variety of types of research, but we also had to kind of go cross-disciplinary or interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary, because this research has really been done in a variety of fields, and we talk about a lot in the program world about, in the funding world about silos. Well, there are also research silos, and some of this research has been done in the ATOD field, but also in criminology. In public health, we've been thinking about violence as a public health issue for about 20, 25 years now, so we don't have as extensive a history as some of the other fields, but we have a slightly different approach. Also in economics and psychology and other social sciences. So we really had to look across literatures and across disciplines when we looked at this research. And of course, we weren't the first people to think about this, to think about the relationship between alcohol and violence. And a number of models emerged from the literature that were summarized really well by Benson et al. In a final report that they did for a Department of Justice-funded study that looked at changing pricing strategies and crime rates. You can get it from the NCJRS website. I haven't seen anything published in the peer-reviewed literature from this study yet. But they summarize the different models that are out there in the literature. A direct model that posits that there's a direct pharmacological effect that leads directly from the consumption of alcohol to violence. And that's been dismissed by most researchers as being a bit too simplistic, noting that, you know, violence doesn't result from every occasion where someone consumes alcohol, and also that there's a huge variation, as Joe mentioned, about the rates of alcohol, the association of alcohol consumption, and the association with violence. So that varies across cultures and across subpopulations. So probably a direct connection is not the model that would be helpful for us. Another model is that both alcohol and violence are related to a third variable, so it's a spurious association. There's a confounder there. A third model is that alcohol is consumed before the violence is committed, but that the decision to commit the violence had already been made. So it might facilitate it, but it really wasn't closely associated. But really what emerged from the literature as being kind of the two most common models, and sometimes it's a combination of these two models, is the conditional and the interactive. So the conditional model posits that if you consume alcohol, it will lead to violence only if there's some other determinant or factor present. And then the interactive model posits that consuming alcohol increases the probability of committing a violent act when other factors related to violence are present. So a lot of what we saw in the literature really was a combination of those two. And I think it was very well summed up by Lipsy, who said that many researchers believe the causal effects come essentially in the form of an alcohol times person times situation interaction. In other words, alcohol consumption increases the probability of violent behavior only for some people in some situations. So it's a complex relationship that has a lot of a variety of causal factors or intervening variables. So after reviewing all that literature, we realized that just calling it alcohol-related violence was too broad. And so we ended up coining the term alcohol-related situational violence and defining it as interpersonal, physically or sexually violent behavior or threats of violence that's associated with drinking events outside the home. And again, if you think about what the goal of developing this model was, which was to help communities develop intervention strategies, we needed to be very specific into types of intervention strategies that they could do. And so what this model excludes is intimate partner violence, child maltreatment, and intrapersonal violence, so suicide and other self-harm. And the reason that we excluded those types of violence because we really felt that the etiologies of those types of violence were distinct. We recognize that there's some overlap, but again, that in terms of the intervention strategies that might emerge, we really needed to differentiate. And the sexual violence, again, we're talking generally about non-partner sexual violence, and we may drop the sexual violence part because there do seem to be some factors that are distinct for sexual violence. So here's the general systems model that Joe showed you, and some of the boxes that are here will look familiar when you see our model. As with Joe, and I'll talk about this in a minute, we are not emphasizing the individual level factors as in our model, although we do include them, recognizing again that we're looking at community-based strategies to change the rates of alcohol-related situational violence at the community level. And so there's our model, and I think Jo has copies of it that she can just pass around, so I don't want to contribute to everyone's eye strain. I know it's difficult to read Okay, that's fine, because I'm going to go through the boxes anyway. So Jo has copies if you need copies after the presentation. And again, this is just a draft. I was looking at this the other day, and I realized I probably could change the direction in a couple of the arrows, but it's kind of a map of how we think these things may be interrelated. Again, I actually teach a theory class at UNC. We talk about conceptual models, and this is not an explanatory model per se, and it's not a model that we're testing. It's just a way that we're mapping out relationships that might be helpful for developing intervention strategies. So I'm going to talk about the intervening variables that we identified. And our consumption variable is what we're calling high-risk drinking. And we pulled this right from the literature, high-risk drinking in terms of risk of perpetrating alcohol-related violence. And we're defining that as patterns of alcohol consumption that increase the chances of experiencing interpersonal violence, so either as a victim or a perpetrator, in and around public drinking settings. Now, What's interesting about this definition is that, and Graham defines this as heavy drinking in the event. So it's not necessarily an individual's usual pattern of drinking, but it's heavy drinking within a certain context. And that's key, I think, if you're thinking about intervention strategies. So we're not necessarily looking at rates of binge drinking or heavy consumption or overall alcohol consumption patterns, but heavy drinking in the event. There's also some evidence that the type of beverage might make a difference, and this is from the criminological literature, that beer consumption is more closely related to assaults, and that liquor consumption is more closely related to homicides, which of course are kind of the most extreme end of assaults. But that's a question mark, again, because it's all ecological research that looked at that. A number of individual factors that I'm not going to dwell on, but being male, being young, certain personality characteristics, your expectations, your expectancies of how you will react to alcohol and how that influences your aggression, and also your perceptions of what the social norms are in your community about how you behave when you consume alcohol. And then that gets into the community norms about alcohol and violence, which Joe touched on, which really have to do with the acceptability or the unacceptability of alcohol consumption, the extent to which alcohol consumption is associated with aggression, and also the extent to which alcohol consumption or drinking is seen as a timeout for normal behavior and sanctions on normal behavior. But as Joe said, we still have so much to learn about this, particularly about how we would intervene to change community norms. So now we're looking at more situational variables, including the drinking context, which are broken into social, physical, and cultural environment. And these I've starred because these are areas that really do have a lot of potential for intervention. They're much more proximal to the alcohol-related violence. So when you talk about drinking context, you're talking about the social environment in which you're drinking. So environments where there's a lot of social involvement, a lot of interaction, especially social involvement that involves competition. So where there are pool tables or sports bars or tailgating, for example, that any kind of social involvement that may involve contests or competition. Also, the presence of intoxicated people increases the risk for alcohol-related situational violence. And the lack of social controls. So what's tolerated in that context? When they look at bars, for example, they look at whether intoxication is tolerated, whether yelling is tolerated. Even swearing seems to have an effect on whether or not alcohol-related, it raises the risk of alcohol-related situational violence. And that makes sense when you think about some of the criminology literature and like the broken windows theory, when you look at the physical environment and the cues that gives people. And that leads me into physical environment where the presence of irritants, smoke, noise, stuffy environment, and crowding and lack of egress seem to also increase the risk of alcohol-related situational violence. And then the cultural environment, again, closely linked to cultural norms and people's perceptions of cultural norms, but really the cultural environment of the drinking setting. So what are the expectations, the expectancies, and the norms, and the reputation of that particular drinking setting? And I've talked a lot about bars, but this could also be sporting venues, arenas, tailgating, any kind of public setting. And what are the expectancies for that particular setting? Joe talked a lot about availability, so I won't talk about it too much here. But again, talking about retail availability, which is the level of access or convenience for individuals to obtain alcohol, independent of cost in this definition. Things like outlet density, hours and days of sale, the minimum age for purchase, and regulations around sales and service. Now, we have in North Carolina, we do have regulations around, for example, sporting events and music concert events about how many drinks per purchase people can get and how many drinks per individual, things like that. And then social availability, which I'm redefining here as Joe defined it, but this could be a key method of access for things like tailgating and other kinds of, we have NASCAR in North Carolina where you're actually allowed to bring a cooler into the stadium, into the, and so the idea of procuring alcohol outside of a retail establishment. And price, again, it's interesting because Joe mentioned how price is strongly related to a decrease in consumption and what she called alcohol-related harm, but it's actually not quite as closely related to decreases in violent crime. In fact, there seems to be a low price elasticity for violent crime, but that really varies by the type of alcohol and crime. And what criminologists have found is that the demographics of the folks who are most likely to commit violent alcohol-related violent crime are the least affected by price. So that's something that's interesting to think about, again, in terms of interventions. Promotion, we know very little about promotion and crime, although there have been some links to promotion consumption. And then for regulations, again, the importance of enforcement. I'm going to jump ahead because I know I'm running out of time. So with all of that in mind, we thought about, okay, well, what would be helpful then to think about intervention strategies? And identifying, in public health, we always try to think about what's modifiable. What is it that we can modify where you will see an impact, kind of the so what question. And for alcohol-related situational violence, it really seems like these proximal characteristics, the characteristics of the drinking setting, may have biggest impact on alcohol-related situational violence. And so I just highlighted the relationship, the relationships in that second column, and then possible prevention strategies in the third column. So this is actually Joe's conclusions slide, and all I did was replace ATOD problems with alcohol-related situational violence because, again, going through the literature, talking to the states, talking to my colleagues at PIER and at the university, we really came up with the same things, that these are complex systems, that there are multiple causal factors, multiple ways that you could intervene, and that the scientific research can give us some clues for intervention. But there's still a lot of questions, and these are just a couple that I pulled out just in my own thinking, going through the literature, which is a lot of, in the criminological literature, there's a real emphasis on disaggregating this problem by the type of crime. So homicide is not the same as an assault, which is not the same as a robbery, and that we really need to look at those relationships separately. And that we may need to look at the types of alcohol separately also. So we've kind of lumped these all together, you know, in our research previously, but it may be important to disaggregate them if we really want to target intervention strategies. And then numerous people have also said, you know, general levels, decreases in general consumption of alcohol may not lead to reductions in alcohol-related situational violence. And we need to think about that because what may work to reduce, for example, DUIs may not also reduce alcohol-related situational violence. So these are things where I think we really need to refine our research, but that give us some ideas of where we could go.